Bad things come in threes. That is what Sarah always said, and that is exactly what happened. I was grounded. Mr. Graham was dismissed. But I didn't think about Sarah's old saying. That's why I didn't even anticipate the third thing. Didn't know it was forming while I brooded that day. I didn't suspect it when the small stones chipped at my bedroom window at night in the last hours of the last day of my punishment. It must have been close to midnight. Mimi was fast asleep in her bed, snoring fuzzily into her pillow. The first little stone hit the window with a click. It could have been the wind. It could have been icicles breaking or snow melting and falling from the eaves. Then the next few little stones hit the window, one after the other, tick, 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 a simple code methodically tapping out a message to come to the window. It continued until I couldn't ignore it. I tiptoed through the dark room and pulled back the curtain. What I saw made me catch my breath. The moonlight from the fingernail sliver of moon had cast all the snow in a pale blue moonscape against the black of the sky. It was so entrancing that I was completely taken off guard when David Vintner's face appeared at the window. I watched his mouth shape words theatrically on the other side of the glass. "Open the window," he mimed. I opened it quickly. The cold air rushed in. Our summer screens had been removed months ago. David put his face close to mine and whispered into my ear, "Ellen, Ellen, get dressed and come out. I have something important to tell you." "You're crazy," I said, thinking, "What a lunatic," not trusting, fear catching in my voice. "I'm grounded. It's nearly midnight. It's freezing out there." "No, it's not," he laughed, moving away from the window and spinning around, face turned toward the heavens. "It's wonderful. Come on, Ellen," he rushed back to the window. "Please, I have something very important to tell you." I think it was the tone of his voice, the brightness of his eyes, the way his narrow white face seemed to be blue, hard, and glittery like the moonlit snow. Maybe it was the week of being confined or the cold pulling up around the sash and the clean smell of night stealing into the room. "Okay, okay," I heard myself saying. "Just wait right there and I'll be out." I dressed carefully, not wanting the cold to lay an icy grip on me, finding ways to lock in the stored warmth of bed and blanket. I tiptoed through the house while everyone slept, wrapped like dreamy chrysalises in their cocoons of warmth. But as soon as I opened the front door, the chill reached in and slapped me, a hand to each cheek where the blood rushed in with warmth, staining them, I imagined, a very bright red. Then it entered my mouth, filling my lungs with icy splinters of cold, and the heat escaped in a fine steam from my nostrils and lips. "David," I said, as the steamy breath gushed out, "are you nuts?" David's eyes were bright. They caught the moonlight. He was very excited. "Ellen," he whispered, grabbing my hands, "I came to say goodbye. I'm leaving." The words sat outside my mind and waited patiently for me to give them the command to enter, but I couldn't let them. Something about them was too much. I chose to focus on something else to distract me. "David, you have gloves?" I said, noticing that my own gloved hands were surrounded by his leather-clad ones. "Yeah," he said proudly. "Nice, from Tad. That's what I wanted to tell you." David was pulling on me. We waded through the snow-covered yard toward the back of the house through the rickety white picket gate propped open for the season by a drift of snow. The baseball field had become a winter amusement park where the trampled snow formed paths that circled and ended in snowmen. Melting stockpiles of snowballs that the boys had amassed had turned to ice. The ruined shell of Mimi's igloo hunched in the corner of the field. I was complaining bitterly. "Look, David, this is crazy. It's freezing out here." The hem of my nightgown, which stuck out from under my coat and below the line of my boots, was soaked through. I had on a hood, but the wind wormed its way through the outer layer of my clothing and now had its icy hands on my body. "Yeah, but it'll be warm here," David said, pulling me down with him against the unbroken half-shell of the igloo. "See?" David put his arms around me. Then he said with a drunken grin on his face, "Isn't that better?" I nodded, shocked out of my mind, surprised to be sitting there in the shell of an igloo with this dangerous, beautiful boy with his arms around me. "What if I were marooned on the moon at midnight in the arms of David Vintner?" I asked myself, supplying the opening line to that favorite game that had somehow wormed its way into the real world. I was brilliantly happy, but at the same time horrified, sensing that something was terribly wrong. Tad, David continued his story, Tad, this guy, he's my friend. He's been helping me out, spending time with me. Ellen, he knows my dad, too, says he knew him 15 years ago, met him in school. David, you mean he knows where your dad is? I asked, suddenly thinking I'd made sense out of the bits of information David was sharing. Well, no, not exactly, David stammered, but I'll find that out later. What's important is this. Tad's in Tokyo now, and that's where I'm going. I'm leaving, Ellen. I'm going to find Tad. He'll let me stay with him, and then who knows? Maybe we'll hang out together for a while. Maybe I'll find my dad. What about your mother? What about Claire, I thought. I was glad those words did not come out of my mouth. There was no place for them in the igloo. They would have melted away the moonscape around us, destroying the thin bridge of ice that now, for a moment, joined David and me. Instead, I said, I'm going to miss you, David. David's grip tightened around me. Bloated by our layers of clothing, we clung to one another like a couple of ticks. I'll miss you too, Ellen, he said gently, his eyes bright, exploring my face, resting on my mouth. Then his mouth was on mine, and I felt his sorrow, the sobs that I couldn't hear this time entering my mouth and falling into my throat. I closed my eyes, and we were spinning around and around, giddy music box dancers under the revolving constellations. I caught my breath. He took off his gloves, put his warm hands on my cheeks, and squeezed my face. He squeezed so hard that tears came to my eyes. I felt a couple of errant drops start from the inner corners. All this shit about growing up, David said to those teardrops. It's hard, isn't it? No, it's worse. It's perpetually fucked. I hate being a kid. It's the worst part of life. You'll be fine, Ellen. You're pretty tough. You've got Sarah and you've got Jean. They're pretty good parents. Well, at least they care. But what about you, David? I asked, talking from the pinch shape of my mouth, not at all discomforted by it, wondering when he'd let go of my face. I must have looked pretty funny talking out of a pinched mouth like that. Oh, sorry, he said, releasing his grip. Me? I'll be fine, too. Better than here. They're killing me here, Ellen. I just have to go. My mom, he laughed. She's used to guys running out on her. And Claire? Well, you know, she's much better off without me around. I'll tell you who I'm really going to miss, though. I'm going to miss you and your family. I wish I were one of you. That would be nice. Okay, so marry me, I wanted to say. We'll grow up together and marry, and neither of us will ever be lonely again. But David, teeth chattering, was already struggling to his feet, replacing his gloves, brushing the snow from his jeans. He stretched out a hand and pulled me up next to him. I wish I were older, he said. Me too, I replied. Then David hauled back and with one banshee hoop, kicked down the last side of the igloo. My next house will be bigger. Mine too, I agreed. Then we rampaged our way through the field, kicking down snowmen, everything, until we reduced all the structures to rubble. Hey, Ellen, David called as I slipped back inside my parents' house. Thanks. Thanks for coming out. Oh, yeah, sure, later. Later, he said. 2 days later, curfew lifted. We all heard the news that David Vintner had disappeared. They were looking for him, of course, looking for clues as to his whereabouts. Sarah and Jean were very concerned. They liked David. They were worried about him. The Vintner boy has disappeared, they said. They quizzed us about whether we knew where he might be. Samuel was questioned most closely. If he'd heard anything, he gave nothing away. Sarah's eyes were full of concern. She looked at me. Ellen, you don't know where he is, do you? I thought about David heading south toward Tokyo, however he could get there, for a rendezvous with someone he hardly knew. No, I answered squarely. I don't know where he is, and it was a fact.